Kenan Thompson has been in the limelight for going on 30 years, which is a lot for a guy in his early 40s. Thompson was a kid when he broke out on Nickelodeon's All That. He was 25 when he went to Saturday Night Live. And 17 seasons later, he's the longest-running cast member in SNL's history, and somebody who doesn't shy away from appearing in sketches as R. Kelly or Bill Cosby. Kenan Thompson spoke with staff writer Vincent Cunningham at the New Yorker Festival in 2019.
Having broken the record for sort of being on the show, your tenure on the show, I think you're in a better position than anybody in the world to say how much the show has changed. And it just seems like your job is so different now than it was maybe in 03. Like, I feel like people...
Say that for probably any comedian, especially these in these woke times. It's very touchy out there. And, you have to be very responsible with what you're doing. And, I think Dave did a great job with that.
One of the things that I've thought a lot about in terms of how much the show has changed, it used to be that there would be like sort of one black cast member that was like there to be Richard Pryor or something, there to like play whoever was in the news, then. And it seems now that you've gotten to this place where you can do like Black Jeopardy and all these things where you can do whole things that are sort of black culture as part of the show in a way that it hasn't been.
Well, these are epic times for America. We've had an African-American president. And he served two terms, epically, And Michael Che is, the first black head writer on that show, And these are the times we're living in. So I think it's a fantastic thing. Bowen is our first, Asian American to get on the show. And he happens to be gay as well, so it's like a double up.
I read today that you are the first cast member to be born after the show had already started.
Yeah.
After the 75, I guess, when the show. So, yeah. I mean, it's been around your whole life. Did it mean a lot to you even when you were a kid? Were you watching it?
It's SNL. There's been, many imitations since, but it's the mothership, It's like watching Star Trek as opposed to Next Generation. It's like it's the real deal. So it just never seemed real for so long. Like, I had such a hard time even associating myself being on the show for a long time. Like, I wouldn't watch, just because I felt like I was ruining it, I felt like I was tainting this great, American-branded, beloved thing that even my family loved, And now I'm up there kind of just fucking around, not taking it as seriously as I needed to or whatever, and I didn't know if I was tarnishing the image in any kind of way or the reputation in any kind of way, because even I hadn't necessarily proved to myself, what kind of caliber of laughs I was able to get.
How early did you know that you wanted to do all this? I mean, you started pretty early. How did it all start?
I mean, I knew I didn't want to work hard. So,
you seem to have failed at that.
I mean, I like to go to work. I like to work hard. It's just one of those natural things. I started doing plays and stuff at school, and we were doing everything, piano lessons, sports, It was just a way to stay out the street. But acting was always the one thing that kind of stuck around, And then once it paid me the first time, I was like, oh, this is definitely it. Because I was cutting grass, for $20 a lawn, non-dependent on how the size of the lawn, So it was just like... people were getting over on 10-year-old Kenan, and it wasn't cool. But then, like, a commercial paid me $800, and I was like, yo, that sounds like eight million. So it lasted for forever. So much candy.
How old were you? What?
I was like 12.
Right.
Yeah.
And a commercial was the first thing you got paid for.
Yes. Yeah. And that was through my teenage years, working through Nickelodeon at the same time and stuff like that. So I got professional at a young age, And I took that very seriously. So
that's strange, being on TV and also being in high school. Like, what?
Yeah, but it was cable, so a lot of them kids weren't really up on it like that. Especially, going to school where I went to school, I don't even know if they had it, that. So a lot of kids didn't have Nickelodeon. So I was kind of just, amongst the nerds.
But back to kind of you starting out, I think obviously the stereotype about like people who you think of as child actors is that they like go through this trouble, that there's some like, you know, yes, anguish. And like you seem perfect. You seem, I don't know, we're gonna find out tonight.
Seriously, would you like a warrant? Okay.
You seem pretty well adjusted. You just offered somebody some water that you don't know. I mean, that's not child actor stuff.
Yeah. It's not like we have to share it.
What was the...
I grew up before social media. So, you know, all my stumblings just weren't reported in the news like that. But now, I'm also like, I don't come from a family of Barry Morris. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not third generation doing this. Like, I'm, you know, the first one to even get... You know, as far as I've gotten, like, my dad had a singing group when he was in the Army, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that was, like, overseas, and he's always bragging about it, but, like, I mean, like show me the record, you know what I'm saying? Like, would love to hear it, as opposed to just hearing about it. I'd love to hear one song, but...
After you had done all that, and you did Kenan and Kel, there was, like, a moment, maybe it was when you started SNL, but was there a weird transition between being that guy that's known for being young and being sort of a child to sort of move into the more adult phase of your career? Was that a rough transition?
Oh, absolutely. Shall we discuss?
Yes, please.
I left Nickelodeon in 2000. So I was chilling. I was feeling very grown, and I was like in the process of buying my first home. And I was like, okay, this is amazing. Like, I'm a settled, you know, established, grown 18-year-old, you know what I'm saying? Like, ready for this, ready to tackle all of this. And then my accountant kind of was a piece of shit. And he took advantage of me as a minor, because when I met him, he was like 15-ish. So right when I first started like making money or whatever. Mm-hmm. But he was helping my mother out with her taxes. And then, you know, her not really being as savvy, God bless her soul, and I mean, she blames herself and like feels bad about it to this day, so I don't bring it up much. But we went to like Walgreens and got a power of attorney sheet and like gave this dude power of attorney when I was like 15. And yeah, he ran off with my shit. So I was like...
Like everything?
You could go ahead and just say everything. You know what I'm saying? So I found out about that at the signing for this home that I picked out. And yeah, he was just, you know, a weird, twisted individual. So all those dreams of me like being the king of Atlanta kind of went out the window. And I was like, shit, I got to get back to work. This happened within 2 days. I decided like, I got to go back to LA and like get back to it. So I moved back to LA with whatever I had left and just, you know, continued to work. But it was really tough. Like, I was sending my tape to SNL like almost immediately, but they were saying like, I look too young. I still kind of do. So I was taking like, you know, jobs here and there, and you know, as a working actor, especially when you're young and in between things get, you know, kind of spread out. So it was like a job and then 6 months with no job, you know what I'm saying? And then trying to make all that shit work while being kind of famous, you know what I'm saying? So like, my brakes are squeaking, I'm getting waved at McDonald's, you know what I'm saying? But I get a free chicken sandwich and ain't nobody really tripping. And I just, you know, just kept being able to pay the bills. And did that hustle, you know what I'm saying? Did like Love Don't Cost a Thing, and then like Felicity, and then Barbershop, and then everything started rolling kind of after Barbershop, because I got the audition for SNL once Tracy left.
Can you tell me how What's Up With That came to be? my favorite sketch in like in SNL.
Thank you. Me too. Yeah. I had an idea. I felt like it would be funny if I had a talk show and didn't let people talk.
Now, often we will see the Oscar winners use their thank you speech to make some kind of a political statement. Now, as a performer yourself, do you think that's appropriate?
That's a great question. I think it's up to the individual. I mean, you know, giving an Oscar speech is a pretty big platform.
Humongous platform.
Yeah. And, you know, a lot of actors have a genuine passion for certain causes.
Passion and action.
I just, you know, I enjoyed, you know, soulful singing and stuff like that. And I felt like it hadn't been on the show like that in a while. And I talked to my buddy Brian Tucker about it, and he was like, starting to get it kind of almost immediately. And then, you know, he's good at like writing out four lines, and then we can, you know, kind of mold those lines into, you know, verses that make sense.
Do you write out ooh wee in the Word doc?
He writes out OOO-WEEE. You know what I mean? So like at the table, I do it right. You know what I mean? And then, yeah, what's up with that? And then one more time, ooh wee. And then what's up with that? And that's a chorus. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
there
you time it out. And then we go from there.
What, I don't know, is one of these more sort of fulfilling for you, creating a new character in a new situation like that, or doing an impression of somebody? Which, are these different parts of the brain, or?
I don't know if it's different parts of the brain. It's definitely people's forte, one or the other, I feel like. I think you're good at impressions, and you're semi-good at character work, or you're really good at character work, and then you're semi-good at impressions. And then, you know, of course, there's some people that can do it all, like Kate McKinnon, you know what I'm saying? But for me, like, impressions come very naturally to me. Like, when I saw Billy Porter yesterday, I was like, oh, I got my next character. Guaranteed, you know what I'm saying?
And then, if you would like to workshop it, please.
It's just one of those things people just fall out of the sky, especially in New York. Like, Jimmy McMillan was one of those things. Like, I would have never researched, you know, a character that behaved like Jimmy McMillan, you know what I'm saying? But he happened to be a guy that, you know, looked like the Lorax and talked about the rent being too high. He wore gloves because he was worried about Agent Orange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, you can't make these things up. At least I can't.
One of my favorite impressions of yours that happened in a sketch was, it was kind of, I mean, it's kind of controversial, but it was, you did Bill Cosby in jail.
So what are you in here for?
You don't ask a man that in here. You put your head down, keep to your business.
Wow, old timer, you really know the ropes. I've never done time before. This friggin' sucks.
Hey! You don't come in here with your filth and your foul, foul filth. You need to get a job.
Hey, Cosby, keep it down. This is the 10th warning and you've only been here 4 days. Lights on!
Wow. Bill Cosby, I mean, on behalf of every one of your fans, it is so disappointing to be meeting you now.
What? I am in my prime. I'm in jail and loving it. No kids with the darndest things, limited interactions with Camille. And when I was fighting incarceration, I had no idea that one of the staple foods of the prison system is Jell-O.
You've been doing Bill Cosby on some level since you were a kid. Like, you've,
yeah, man.
I've seen you do it forever. And then
it's one of the more heartbreaking things of my life, I would say. Number one, because I was born in 78, so I grew up throughout the 80s in the Cosby Show. There was nothing bigger, especially in a black household, you know what I'm saying? And he was the first comedian I got to know because he was the clean one. The first book, I think, like the first, you know, autobiographical book that I got was his. Huge fan of Jell-O, you know what I mean? All about it. And on it went, you know, into a different world, you know, picture pages. Like, the guy was everywhere, you know?
Yeah.
And then I get up to a point where I'm able to play Fat Albert, you know what I'm saying? And it's like, oh, that's a huge deal for me, you know,
yeah,
especially for the culture. So I wanted to do a great job. I couldn't wait to meet my idol. Got to meet him first day. Got to work with him, you know, a couple weeks later or whatever. It was a cameo with just me and him. And was a little exposed to kind of like his real nature as opposed to like his, you know, persona that he puts on. And it was a little raw. So it wasn't as raw as what really came out, but it was definitely a peek behind the curtain of like, oh, this is not just Mr. Clean or whatever. It was never anything like overly alarming where I was just like, you know, police, I think you guys need to check this dude out. But, you know, it was, you know, I just had never heard him even curse, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So, like, hearing him just talk casually and stuff like that was, you know, shocking. And then, yeah, it all blew up after that. And when it all came crashing down, it was like, that's crazy, but it doesn't eliminate what my job is. And my job is to hold the mirror up to what life is. Same reason why, you know, we had to do the OJ thing. There was a guy named OJ who's out of jail and dating. You know what I'm saying? It's just a reality.
He's on Twitter right now.
It's not cool. I would rather he didn't. But, you know, that's the times.
Yeah. On that happy note, thank you for doing this, man.
Oh, my pleasure, man.
Kenan Thompson, speaking with staff writer Vincent Cunningham in October 2019.